will come to order. We have two matters before us this morning. Public hearing on House Bill 2031 and public hearing on House Bill 2707. Because these bills are as intimately linked as they are, we're going to open a public hearing on both of the bills at the same time, and that is so ordered. At this point, what I'd prefer to do, before we do anything else, is take public testimony. But I think what I need to do is talk just a little bit about some of the things that we're considering and looking at. And I think maybe what I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Representative Butler, is to ask you to introduce the proposal that we talked about yesterday.
I don't have that. I don't have that detail, Mr. Chair. Okay. You have the detail. Does anyone else?
It's
have
also
the detail?
It's also in the dash two amendments.
Have I seen it?
Of 2031. It's this
right,
plan here.
I had sent my staff down to pick this up from Dr. Warner's office.
I just see what's behind here.
And I had not received this. Evanelli's just finished this morning. LRO, this was finished yesterday. You had this?
Last night. I got it this morning.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chair, just a reminder, because
yes.
If you don't mind, House, these amendments are 2031, and 2031 has been replaced entirely by the dash one amendments 2031.
That's correct.
So these are.
We should have an A engrossed version of 2031. An A engrossed version we should have of that bill.
I don't think I have an A engrossed version.
I've got an A engrossed version. I just sent my staff down to pick up the.
If you have a copy of the amendments, the House amendments to House Bill 2031, those are exactly the same as the A engrossed version.
Okay,
with the omission of the title.
Okay, so I'm just trying to get on the right page here,
okay.
Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
All right. Just to clarify what we're talking about, House Bill 2031 contains several components.
Okay, I got
it. It contains a component that that changes the inheritance tax so that there is an exemption for the first $2 million of a gross estate rather than the current. $1 million.
And that's in section?
That's in section one,
okay,
of the bill. Section and section two. Section three is simply a dating issue. Section four contains the corporate minimum tax that had been proposed several weeks ago. The other sections essentially bring that into effect. That's what the committee did at the last time we addressed this bill. The other bill, House Bill 2707, also incorporates the balance of the agreement that was made, and the version that we're dealing with today is the B engrossed version of House Bill 2707. What this does is sets up a rainy day fund the way in which it would be triggered. It also sets up, redirects the current corporate kicker establishes the fund for the mini kicker. I should have said on the A engrossed of 2031 that in section 6 of that bill, the mini kicker is spent. So these two bills are hooked together in that way. The balance of the B engrossed version of House Bill 2707 puts into effect the other elements of the agreement that was reached by leadership
It was just slightly over a week ago.
It feels like longer ago than that, doesn't it? And yes, ma'am. Representative Berger.
Explain to me again, Paul, the mini kicker and how this works.
The mini kicker
which
is
section of which.
In 2031, there is a credit. It doesn't refer to the kicker. It's
okay,
just a credit for small companies. It's in Section 6. And for companies, either Oregon-only companies or apportioned companies that have sales of $5 million or less in Oregon, they will receive a 67% credit for 1 year. And that happens to be coincide with our current estimate on the kicker.
Okay.
Now, that, however, would not apply against whatever minimum that you decide on. The minimum is an alternative, a separate calculation from all credits, including this credit, so from all credits.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes, please. Representative Brown.
Well, I just want to make sure, in the language of Section 6, it talks about equal, I just want to make sure I understand, it says equal to 67%. But we are saying it would be the full amount of what would normally be the kicker for these companies with 5 million sales and less. Or you're saying it's 67%, not you, but is the bill saying it's 67% of what would be the normal kicker for those?
67% of their liability after all credits, yes.
So it's a one-third reduction what the kicker would have been.
It's calculated the same way the kicker is calculated.
Okay. It's the same. Okay, that's what I'm asking.
Calculated the same way.
Same
it just
thing.
Doesn't refer to the kicker.
Yeah.
And the kicker, the credit on the kicker itself, is not going to be precisely known until August.
Okay.
So this makes this a known thing. 67% is the current estimate.
Okay. Thank you.
So it may be a little high, it may be a little low, but that's what the bill says we will do.
Okay.
Representative Berger.
Yeah. Would you explain to me why this piece is not in the other bill?
Representative Berger, this bill, 2031, is relating to tax rates, tax administration. It's a tax bill. And tax bills cannot have an emergency clause on them. So that's why you'll notice in Section 8, it takes effect 91st day after the date. So the credit is really a change in tax law. So therefore, it goes into this bill without the emergency clause. Now, 2707, the Constitution requires you to change the estimate prior to July 1st, prior to the end of the biennium. So you have to have an emergency clause in 2707 for it to be consistent with the Constitution.
But this, because
this is a tax bill relating to tax law, all these sections are changing tax law, and you have three major changes, then this cannot have an emergency clause, and that's why we put it in there. Now, what 2707 does in order to make it revenue neutral with respect to the general fund, it pulls out $24.8 million of the kicker retention and puts it in the general fund. So this 2707 puts $24.8 into the general fund, 2031 takes it out and provides a credit.
Okay, that's where they're connected. One pulls it out and the other
spends it.
And that's Section 6 of the engrossed.
Section 6 is the one that calculates that credit for small corporations.
And it's going to stay, as I think I heard the chair say, it's going to stay at 67% no matter what happens actually.
Yes.
It's
And if I may, that is because it connects with the amount that is coming out in 2707.
And that may be flexible.
No.
No, it's set to.
That's a specific amount, again, the same.
24.8. Mr. Chair, that's Section 3 of 2707.
Yeah.
Section 3.1A.
Page 2, line 17.
Mm-hmm. The amount of $24.8 million shall be deposited in the general fund.
And
that's going to happen regardless of how that actual revenues come in. So when you calculate the amount that goes in the rainy day fund, you'll look at the actual amount that comes in, and that can be all the way up to $975 million. And what you'll do is pull $24.8 million off the top and put it in the general fund, and then the remainder would go in the rainy day fund.
I'm sorry, you guys. I don't have the Bee Engrossed.
The Bee Engrossed version?
I don't have the Bee Engrossed-8 amendments.
Isn't the Bee Engrossed the same as the House amendments to the A Engrossed version? Do you have that?
Yes. Dash 8?
The Dash 8 would be the same thing as the Bee Engrossed, because Dash 8 replaced the entire bill, I think. Is that right? I believe it did.
Well, now, wait a minute. I have Dash 8s, and then I have...
Dash 8s would be the same.
And then if you have something called House Amendments to A Engrossed House Bill 2707, is exactly the same as the Bee Engrossed without the summary and the title.
Okay, so I can, this is the current 2707 here.
That's 2707B is the House Amendments to the A Engrossed House Bill 2707.
I'm sorry if I seem confused.
No, that's fine.
but
it just so happens, because it's a complete replacement, that they're identical.
Right. Okay.
The only difference is the lines switch around.
The lines don't coincide.
It's actually page 2, line 3.
Of what you just handed me.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of the amendments.
I thought this was
the A and Gross.
Okay.
So,
now, okay, so
three,
there it is.
If we're ready, I'd like Tom to explain the proposed amendment, if you're ready to do that.
I'm almost ready. I just wanted to clear up one item. Paul, I've received a copy of the email to Deborah Buchanan and Paul Warner, stating some concerns from the CPAs relative to C corporations and S corporations. And you received that. Have you had an opportunity to review that? I just printed this off last night late.
We have, but the A2 version does refer to a different section.
Okay,
yes.
So, and that, as I'm looking, the A2, A2 amendments, I'm looking down on page one, line 12 through 15, and there's where it accepts out the C corporations, saying that they are different than all other corporations as defined above. That corrects this issue that the CPAs brought forward. Okay.
And we are now back on 2031.
We're back on 2031, and Representative Butler is going to describe the proposed amendment to the corporate minimum tax proposal. Just as a matter of history, the leadership agreed yesterday to appoint a committee, a small work group to work on this issue. And they appointed Representative Butler, myself, and Senator Deckert to that committee. We worked yesterday on this proposal. Senator Deckert had to leave, but Representative Butler and I continued to work on it. And I'd ask Representative Butler to go ahead and present the proposal that we arrived at yesterday. Now, I have to say that this proposal hasn't been agreed to by anybody, but it's a proposal that the two of us looked at to deal with some of the issues that had been raised about the corporate minimum tax. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I say thank you again for agreeing to have an actual work session on 2031, where we had not previously having a public hearing on it. So that said, I would like to get a copy, extra copies of the printout from LRO of the current proposal dated 3707, and get it down to the Senate Republican office, where my leadership from the House is presently meeting with those folks to see if they can get this properly vetted there. What this proposal is, it's a combination of both the corporate minimums for both C's and S corporations, as well as a small change in the corporate income tax rate. The C corporation income tax rate is presently 6.6%. This particular iteration moves that up 0.3% to 6.9% maximum rate, and of course minimum rate as well at that particular point, because there's only one corporate rate, and that is 6.6%. So that would move that entire rate to 6.9%. Which in effect is about a 5% increase in the taxes that corporations would be paying. But in no event would they pay less than the minimum tax. The minimum taxes that we have discussed are as follows. All corporations, C and S corporations, earning less than 25,000 or selling with gross sales of less than $50,000 a year would pay $25. So a C corporation or an S corporation without any sales, a corporation that's sitting on the shelf waiting to be used would pay, rather than $10, would pay a $25 minimum filing fee. For sales, for companies with sales of over 50,000 but under 150,000 in gross sales, the rate on S corporations and C corporations would be $100. Then for corporations, all corporations with sales between 150,000 but less than $500,000, all of those corporations would pay not less than $200 minimum tax. And that's the upper limit of all S corporations. S corporations would move their effective filing fee at whatever amount of gross sales they have in excess of $500,000 in the state of Oregon. Oregon sales would then have an effective tax rate of $200 minimum tax. And then, of course, the shareholders pay the tax on any earnings it's assumed to be at least 8.5, I think, is what we use on pass outs, pass through entities, and normally 9%. That for S corporations sets a new 200% of where we have been, 2,000% increase from $10 to $200 as an upper limit on corporate taxes. Then for C corporations earning with gross sales in excess of $500,000, the proposal today is that those C corporations for sales of in excess of $500,000 would be at the rate of 0.002 times the gross sales. And that takes you up, and I believe we calculated that this morning, and I, without the benefit of this, what's that upper limit, Paul, to a maximum of $7,500 where the sales would be?
Sales that are above.
Representative Butler, it works out a little over $4 million, about $4.1
million. $4.1
million. That would be basically to do that equation, the 200 plus the 0.002.
Okay. So to sales of less than $4.1 million, they would still be calculating it at $200 plus 0.002 on the sales in excess of $500,000. And for sales of $4.1 million and above, the new corporate minimum would be $7,500. Now, of course, they will also be calculating a tax on their taxable income, and the new taxable rate would be moved to a flat 6.9%. Again, a 5% increase, and that 6.9% would be the new corporate tax limit, and all corporations would be obligated to calculate, all C corporations would be obligated to calculate their tax on the 6.9% tax rate, at which time they would compare that to the maximum tax as calculated under this iteration that we have before us today, paying the greater of those two taxes, and the C corporation tax that they are calculating would be at the regular 6.9% less any actual tax credits, not tax payments, but tax credits, so that they would be then comparing a net tax liability before tax payments and comparing that and weighing that then against the corporate minimum taxes, which we have prepared the calculation or presented the calculation of today. So the anticipation is that this would raise in additional new corporate income taxes, that is the 0.3%, would raise an additional $42 million, while the implementation of a new corporate minimum tax for corporations of less than $500,000 a year in sales, both C's and S's, would generate an $11 million of new revenue, while for those C corporations who have previously been paying something less than regular taxes and less than a minimum tax of $7,500 would now be paying a total of a $96 million additional, generating new revenue in this proposal of $149 million. And Mr. Chair, I think that encapsulates where we have come to this particular point.
I think it does.
And as you had indicated, this has not been thoroughly vetted, but it is now outed.
Okay. The committee will stand in recess for 10 minutes. The Revenue Committee will come back to order. Okay, thank you. I'd like to go ahead with the public hearing, and I've got four people signed up to testify, and I'll ask you to come up, and you can sort of decide how to order yourselves, if you would. We'll take a few minutes now to hear public comment on the proposals that you've heard, both contained in the bill, the proposal that Representative Butler made, and anything else you want to say about these bills. I ask you to keep it brief and to the point, because we have very little time this morning to get our work done. And that's Marshall, Adamson, Lundquist, and Gallagher. If you would come forward, please. Are there others in the room who would like to be heard this morning? I don't see any hands. Thank you. You pick the order you'd like to go in and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. John Marshall, representing Associated Oregon Industries. First of all, I'd like to give appropriate credit to you, Mr. Chairman, to Representative Butler and Senator Deckert. Yesterday was a long day, and I'm sure that by the end of the day you were as tired as we were, but to go into these intense meetings and deal with a significant, what I would call a story problem, I think
and we appreciate
a lot of credit for the work.
And we appreciate that, but we also need to thank our staff for putting in the extra work.
Indeed.
Some of them were kind of bleary-eyed by late last night.
As you know, Mr. Chairman, we saw the piece of paper last night around 8 or so, so we've only had a chance to ruminate over it for about 12 hours, and hopefully, like you, we slept most of those. At first blush, the change in the structure of the corporate minimum tax is a significant improvement over the previous structure. It appears to be more progressive and based on the ability to pay, and the caps certainly give our business community the certainty that they need going in to know what their maximum liability under that minimum would be. There's still, however, a number of questions. We, of course, like you as an association, have a caucus-like structure. Unfortunately, our caucus can't meet all at once in a single room. So we have not had an opportunity to send this proposal out and get the feedback that we believe would be important not only for us to make judgments about this proposal, but you as well. There are different corporations, different size, different market segments, all of which have maybe a different response to this in terms of how they might be impacted, how it would impact their business and their competitiveness in whatever market they might be operating. There are other questions about S-Corps and how their tax returns are filed. Of course, we know that S-Corps pay the personal income, or their employees and owners pay the personal income tax, and how this new structure would play into that, we're uncertain. If an S-Corp pays a personal income tax, does this new minimum become some kind of a credit or a deduction against those taxes? We don't know that. How does this proposal impact those small C corporations that will be due credit for the so-called mini kicker? How does that interplay? We're not sure. And finally, I think we have to recognize that Oregon is not an island. We don't exist by ourselves. We have to be competitive with other states and certainly now with other nations. And we'd like an opportunity to view how this new corporate minimum compares with other states that tax their businesses based on net income, and how they approach some kind of a fee for doing business if they don't earn the corporate the net income which would be taxed. And I think that we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that this does represent a significant departure from the way that we currently tax businesses, particularly C corporations in this state. We're moving away from net income to gross receipts. We understand the political firestorm that's been created over our corporate minimum and the fact that it's only $10 and has been that way since 1931. And we and our organization came into this session prepared to take a look at that. But unfortunately, and as a friend of mine likes to say, I was born at night but not last night, the policy here is being driven by the amount of revenue being raised. So you have the policy being driven by revenue rather than if we had our druthers, you've got the policy being driven by revenue, and we think the revenue should be driven by the policy. That is, look at what an appropriate fee for doing business in the state ought to be for a corporation that doesn't earn an income and therefore subject to the income tax, and what that is an appropriate amount for that fee ought to be. We have been supportive from the beginning of a one-time diversion of the corporate kicker to create a rainy day fund. There appears to be broad agreement surrounding that issue. We would encourage you to advance that proposal and take the time that's necessary to consider some of the implications on this what we would consider a significant tax increase, if you will, and give a little bit more consideration to the impact it has on a variety of types of businesses. There are literally thousands of Oregon-based, Oregon-grown businesses that employ tens of thousands of Oregonians, and that will be impacted by these changes. And we think that those businesses and their employees deserve a thoughtful, thorough consideration rather than a shortcut to tax policy, given the magnitude of the proposed revenue impact of this measure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Portland Business Alliance. We've divided this up, and we all agree with what Mr. Marshall is saying as an outline of the position. From the point of view of the Portland Business Alliance, we came into this session with two overriding directions. One, we agreed with the creation of the Rainy Day Fund, and we understood that the corporate kicker would be part of that solution, and that has always been a position we've supported in all the materials we've distributed. The second one, which we've never really gotten much of a chance to talk about, is overall tax reform and stability, revenue stability inside of the state. The Morris-Schrader-Deckert plan that was talked about during the summer, they came many times to the Portland Business Alliance. We look very positively on this. This is not what you're doing today is not tax reform. It's not it's slight amount of tax stability, but it doesn't reach the level that we wanted to see this committee and this body look at this session. So what we're left with is a $150 million corporate tax hike. And the last thing I want to say, and I'd like to make very clear to all the members of this body and members of the legislature, is that we as a group, and especially the three of us at this table, were never involved in a discussion of the corporate minimum. We were always involved in a discussion of the Rainy Day Fund and the corporate kicker. The deal that we were working on was the corporate kicker for the creation of the Rainy Day Fund. If you look back in the materials put out by this group, you will see constant support of that. When the corporate minimum got put on the table, we only objected to the way that the corporate minimum was raised and the way and the direction of that and tying of those pieces together. So the deal that the legislature, the members of the legislature constructed, was not a deal in which we were consulted or were a party of. And we do appreciate this opportunity to put our feelings on where we wanted tax policy to go on the record for today. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson with Associated General Contractors. And like my colleagues at the table, I appreciate the opportunity to share with you the concerns of the construction industry on this issue. First, let me say that we are strongly supportive of the Rainy Day Fund that we view as fiscal stability. It's good for the bond rating. It will save taxpayers money and make more money available for infrastructure, which is all good policy. We applaud the fact that it is bipartisan and there is agreement on that piece. And there is the business community, both sides of the legislature. We strongly encourage you to move forward on that piece. But in looking at this piece of paper for the last 12 hours, some of which I was pleased to sleep, it is hard for me to sit here and tell you today what impact this will have on my companies. I can tell you that it looks a lot better than what's currently in 2031. However, I'm concerned, and we are as an organization, constantly supporting entry into the industry, especially for small and emerging businesses. And those folks generally have revenues under $5 million. And the impact of those folks that are C-Corps under $5 million, what it means against their potential tax credit, what it means for those low margins, I can't sit here and advise you today on what that means to them and what impact that will have on emerging small businesses, women and minority businesses coming into Oregon across a variety of sectors, but specifically my industry that has high sales, low margins. I'm still concerned about the impact on those folks, and I just don't know. We strongly encourage the folks around in front of us to take the time to properly vet that. Let's get more time to make sure that as we move this policy forward, we're aware what the broader impacts are going to be on business creation and growth. We strongly we want to say thank you to the folks who spent hours and hours yesterday trying to make this better. We appreciate that. But we still believe that more time is necessary to make sure that we get this right, because it will impact startup businesses. It will impact small and emerging and minority-owned businesses that we want to succeed and grow in this state. And we don't know what impact this will have, and so we just ask you for more time.
Thank you. Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for allowing us to come before you. I sort of feel like we're developing a family here because of our many meetings. First of all, I want to thank you specifically and Representative Butler and Senator Deckert for working with me yesterday. Starting with that, I believe I come to the decision that you make the case for a thorough analysis of this issue, because what you have before us today is, in my opinion, superior to what we had before. I think that only builds a case as we put the time into it. And unfortunately, you didn't have the opportunity to work with all the stakeholders involved in that. This was, as I think you characterized, sort of a technocratic attempt at looking at this, and you've done a great job. But I think that only builds a case for what my colleagues here have said is we need more time to thoroughly analyze this and come out with what I believe can be the best, but it will not happen unless we spend a considerable amount of time doing that. I guess to put it in somewhat of a framework of a maturation, if we think of looking at the corporate kicker and the tax policy and how far we have matured, I'd say we've really cut the umbilical cord, but I'm not sure that we're past preschool at this point. And I say that in not any negative way. I just simply say it's a tough road. It's a very tough road in this education process. When I say we, and we're a part of that as much as the legislature is, and so I think we need to have that maturation process in order to make it really work. What do we favor? I will say the same thing that the others have, is that we think we don't know the answer. I just don't know the answer for our membership, what the implications are. But what do we support? We've got to be positive about this. We obviously support a rainy day fund. We support an ongoing revenue stream. We support a cap. We support putting the corporate kicker in there of $290 million. We believe also that there should be the exclusion that the Republicans and Senator Butler, I think, have led on in regard to the mini corporate kicker, if you will, going back the $25 million. We think that ought to be part of the proposal. Those are the things that we can support and can say unequivocally we support that this morning, and hope that you will further take a look at that, because it's the art of the doable. I also want to finish by saying this. OBA is here ready to talk about the minimum corporate. We are not stalling. That's not the issue. If you'll notice in, let's say, the agenda that we gave you all in the very first part of the session, not only did we have it in that agenda, we had it in our last, we actually had a bill last time to deal with that. So I want to say that from speaking from OBA, we are here to support an ongoing analysis of that, and we will support something over where we are today. The $10 is just not acceptable. So I want to leave that positive note that we're ready to come to the table and put our assets in the mix
and come up with the best policy we can possibly that is driven by tax policy and not simply by determining, by trying to get a particular revenue figure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lundquist. Are there questions for the panel? Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, things are moving so fast I'm having trouble even framing questions. If you folks could check me if I'm wrong, and then I'll get to a question. The original proposal in 2031 for corporate minimum was viewed as a gross receipts tax. It's rather than a fee, it was a gross receipts tax. We have taken that out in this amendment and added, taken a corporate minimum that sweeps in S-corps that weren't in it before, correct? And then added basically a permanent tax rate. Am I correct? Am I characterizing it fairly accurately?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, though we see the portion that deals with the corporate minimum, essentially an alternative minimum tax, if you will, that on the C-corps above $500,000, it is still up to that $7,500 cap, a gross receipts tax on what are essentially going to be businesses under about $5 to $10 million.
Okay. Yeah. Another point that I would have made had I thought of it. I guess my other point that I wanted, the real question in here is, you've had 24 hours, how many of those S-corps are going to get sucked into this and C-corps that are going to have this? Have you heard from who have had a chance to weigh in on this?
Well,
I mean, you're here. You're the usual suspects. How about my Chamber of Commerce? Have they had a chance to hear from me or to notify me?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Representative Berger, I made 6 phone calls. I did not make any contacts because of the time frame. So certainly we haven't had time to do that. And I guess I just point out again, we'd like to have the input and looking at the tax policy change rather than simply trying to come to a revenue change based on the tax policy to get there. And Mr. Chairman, I applaud you for, you have a tremendously difficult job. So I hope you don't take it. We're trying to derail anything. That's not the issue. We just believe we want good legislation to come out of this body and that the Rainy Day Fund is what we're keeping on.
If I could respond, Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, it would be my intent, if we have the time, we have a tax and fiscal policy committee that has a board, an executive committee with some certified smart people that represent companies from all over the state of all different sizes and tax structures, and it would be my intent to poll them and say, here's the plan, give me some data where I can talk more intelligently about this issue than I'm unfortunately been able to thus far.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, let me preface my question by commenting to you that you and I had a pretty good discussion yesterday about when we introduce a gross receipts tax in Oregon as an alternative minimum tax base, that it isn't long before you have someone that wants to come and make some adjustments to that base, the same way as we've got over with the 6.6% right now with the tax credits that come against it. Actually, John Marshall introduced the concept, which is a very, very fair concept, which I could certainly embrace, and that is an alternative minimum taxable credit, an alternative minimum tax credit, which says, yes, we suffered a loss this year, and yes, we will pay this new base of $7,500 because we did have sales of $5 million in our small Oregon-based company. So we're perfectly willing to go ahead and pay $7,500 on a $1,000 loss this year. And you and I looked at some losses that a Bend accountant sent to us with some small losses and some small profits on companies that were making sales of between $1 million and $15 million. what I would like to say is that I can certainly embrace the idea, and you and I talked about the fact that some of these folks would be paying under the new arrangement, they would be paying $7,500, but that the loss obviously wasn't a permanent loss. It was something that was temporary that they could recapture the next year. My thought is this, that if there is an alternative minimum tax, then should we embrace the concept of an alternative minimum tax credit? And so I bring back to John, is that an idea that came from your tax group by any chance?
Mr. Chairman, it's just one of those issues that as I was trying to go to sleep last night, I was thinking about in terms of how this works. So no, it was not one that I have had run by anybody that knows more about this than I do, that I'm certain knows more about this than I do.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I, the question I would have then, is that an idea that we could embrace at some point? Perhaps it's too late for this particular bill, but I don't want to damage those companies who have, it doesn't matter for the record, but this was actually sent to other members of the House. It's a CPA from Bend, and he uses these numbers with permission. These are from 2005 tax returns, with permissions from the five clients involved, showing what and pulling them out of his file just based upon companies with $1 million and more in sales. Three of them had small losses, modest loss, with a $2 million gross sales, they had an $82,000 loss. They would be paying, based upon this, probably something in the vicinity of about $3,000 on a $82,000 or $83,000 loss. If they knew that there were good times coming, obviously they know that the good times are coming, or they wouldn't stick in a business in Oregon or anywhere else necessarily, but if they knew that they could use that $3,000 or $4,000 credit towards their regular tax in the ensuing year, then that's something where we can establish a little more fairness in the alternative minimum tax that we've got here.
Interesting thought.
Mr. Chair, I would say that this is exactly the kind of policy discussion that we would be very happy to enter into about how do you structure something that provides some stability, but also it is balanced and fair, and that conversation will simply take time, but that AGC is willing, more than happy, to sit at the table and have that conversation.
Thank you. Further questions of the panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming today. Are there others who would like to testify on this bill? Yes, sir. Come forward.
Mr. Chair, I also understood that Representative Cameron had folks from the Salem area that he was trying to marshal to get in, but evidently time did not
permit. Yeah, and we're going to have to be extremely brief in order to get our work done this morning. Yes, sir.
90 seconds, Mr. Chairman. My name is Cedric Hayden. I represent Hayden Family Dentistry Group, also known as West Coast Dental. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for allowing me to ask this question. I know very little about this tax issue. I am not able to answer any of your questions. I just have one question for myself. The health care providers in the state of Oregon pay a provider tax of 6.6%. In the aggregate, between the medical, dental, and hospitals, it is tens of millions of dollars. My question is, will we pay both taxes?
Thank you. Excellent question. Do we know the answer to that, Paul?
Mr. Chair, that is a separate tax and separate calculation based on the gross receipts in that industry. So it would be a separate tax.
So the answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
But it does not. It would pay at the 6.9% rate.
No, the 6.6% is just the rate that was determined in that bill. It's not tied to the corporate income tax rate.
Okay. All right.
I said, right. Thank you.
Separate tax,
thank
separate base, separate rate.
Are there others who wanted to testify this morning? Yes.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, since it was mentioned, Genoa Ingram representing the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce, a newly formed organization less than 2 years old, representing approximately 70 chambers across the state of Oregon. We have asked for additional time to look at how this will impact our members. I, too, last night considered calling some of my members in the Salem area who had expressed an interest in the earlier proposal and had wanted to come and testify, but just wasn't comfortable calling them last night at 7 o'clock saying, how would you like to come and testify at 8 o'clock tomorrow on a proposal that we have not, you know, seen yet. So we appreciate the additional time and consideration. The Oregon State Chamber of Commerce will be participating with other interest groups to discuss the proposals, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Others? Yes, ma'am.
Chairman Hart, members of the committee, Angie Dilks representing the Smart Growth Coalition. We're a group of about a dozen Oregon-based corporations. I just wanted to add in quickly, I know folks have talked about the difficulty in getting to the members this morning. Apparently tax directors work at really odd hours, because I actually have heard back from several of them earlier than I expected to. I was kind of excited to see that. And they don't necessarily have an alternative to your proposal to suggest, but when I talked about the increase in the corporate tax rate, the response was not pleasant at all. They were very opposed to that, as you might imagine, and strongly encouraged the committee to look at other alternatives. They kept going back to, okay, so is this a permanent, to get this $150 million today, we're going to permanently increase the corporate tax rate? And I responded that, yes, as it's currently proposed, that would be how it would be structured. So I just wanted to add that in, echoing comments you've heard from the other groups just a few minutes ago.
Thank you. Thank you very much. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2707 and House Bill 2031. And I'm going to take another short recess, probably about 10 minutes. So don't anybody wander off too far. Yeah. I'm informed that the Republican caucus will be meeting shortly. The committee will stand in recess until 10 o'clock. All right. The revenue committee will come to order. We're waiting for Paul to get back from LC with an amendment. We have reached, we think, a tentative agreement that nobody likes very much, but that's the nature of agreements, it seems, in this building. And if I'm going to recite it, and I want other people's comments after I do that. And I think I should say that in the process of doing that, we'll open a work session on the two bills, House Bill 2707, House Bill 2031. Maybe a little complex, but I think we can manage it. The things that we're going to do are as follows. I'm just going to go through the list. And that is, we're going to take House Bill 2707, be engrossed version, that's based on the agreement that was reached Wednesday of last week, after several other things were added to it in order to make certain that we actually had complied with everyone's understanding, which included a change in the redirect, a change in the triggers, and now we're also going to add an amendment which indicates that the bill only goes into it does not become operative unless House Bill 2031 is approved by both houses and signed by the governor on or before March 16th. So that takes care of that piece. It takes the bill as we sent it out as we sent it out of committee last time, with that one change, and that is encompassed in the B-10 amendments to House Bill 2707 and B-10. Have I got that right?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Now then, on the other bill, we're waiting for an amendment to accomplish what I'm about to describe, but we're going to remove from the other bill all the references to the inheritance tax. That's section 1 and section 2 and section 3. We're also going to remove all reference to a corporate minimum tax. That's section 4 and section 5. What's left is section 6, the purpose of which is to give a tax credit of 67% of this year's taxes to corporations that qualify because they have sales of less than $5 million. And the effect of that is to spend the money that comes out in House Bill 2707 and is deposited in the general fund in section three of that bill. So most of this bill just goes away. Sections 1 through 5. We keep section 6, and then we add another small section which ties the bill to the bill, House Bill 2707, and I'm looking for my copy of that, and that's the A4 amendments, which you should have. House Bill 2031-A4, and that amendment is going to have to be changed because I can see that it also refers to sections that we're going to remove in the other amendment, so that's going to have to be fixed too. But the object of it is to
thank you,
that's the same one we've got. The object of it is to hook these measures together so that if 2707 fails to pass, then this measure would not become operative either. And we're going to have to enact. This is one of those examples where we may be able to do a hand amendment, because what we're doing is we're going to remove section numbers with the other amendment, and we're going to not need the section numbers in here. I don't know. Can we do a conceptual amendment on this one?
Well,
or do we need to have them draft another one?
Well, I think we should have them draft another one, would be my advice, Mr. Chair.
Now, let's get comments from the committee about what I've just said,
mm-hmm.
and whether you think this meets the understandings that we've reached this morning.
It does, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Berger?
Yeah. Fundamentally, 2707 is unchanged except for the amendment that ties it together with 2031.
Correct.
Correct?
Yes.
But we're not making changing it to it. 2031, however, would have a similar amendment.
Yes.
But the sections would be removed that have the corporate minimum proposal in it and the inheritance tax in it.
That's my understanding.
Both of those sections. And what is left is the section that basically gives back to smaller corporations their kicker.
That's right.
That's
and
my...
I will tell the committee that when I heard about this proposal, I immediately requested LC to draft the amendment to deal with that. Obviously, we need a new version of A4 as well. And so, unless there's more conversation about that question, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, again, thank you for agreeing to have public testimony on 2031 and the concepts which had been embedded in 2031. And I, for one, appreciate the opportunity which these proposed amendments, which you've been kind enough to order, will now afford businesses in Oregon to come forward and discuss in a thoughtful and timely manner relative to alternative minimum taxes and gross receipts taxes as it relates to a well-vetted, well-put-together system which has many, many years of experience in a corporate income tax world and a corporate income tax system in the state of Oregon. I think we heard good ideas relative, and you and I, Mr. Chair, have discussed this outside of committee, the possibility of making certain adjustments to an alternative minimum tax. But I certainly think that any kinds of discussions around the business activity tax, around the commercial activity tax, need to have thoughtful and considered opinions and investments by the business community, so that as Oregon examines both its minimum tax structure, which is, as is indicated, many, many years old since 1931, since it was actually changed, and as we then examine the possibility of having alternative minimum tax in the state of Oregon, that businesses will be able to come forward, both C corporations as well as S corporations, who may be affected by the minimum taxes which we have been discussing, which I was prepared to vote yes on today, in order to get this bill back to the committee floor. Again, Mr. Chair, you mentioned that we had worked collaboratively and cooperatively with a nominated member of the Senate Democratic Caucus, as well as yourself and myself, to get together and do our very best to come up with some ideas. While those ideas did not enjoy a great unanimity of support and opinion, I guess I can be like the person that says I am unanimous in my own opinion, I guess, at that particular point. While it did not enjoy that great unanimity of support, we are here at this particular point with something that gives us the opportunity now to open that discussion, and I would commit myself as well as anyone else that would join with me to say that that discussion will now carry forward in a very, I would hope, a very productive and an open forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler. And I did neglect to mention that as a part of our conversation this morning about these issues, I think it was generally agreed that we will continue our conversation of the components of the bill that are not being voted on today. The business community who testified here earlier today and also at other times have made it very clear that they're interested in pursuing these conversations. We are as well. And I appreciate, Representative Butler, your comments about that. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am certainly disappointed that we are not dealing today with a broader package. I was quite hopeful when we began all this that we would be able to get something that addressed not only the need for a rainy day fund, which is really paramount, but also the other pieces of it. And I thought we had put together a reasonable compromise, one that had been agreed on. So while I will support what we're talking about now as an alternative, and I know that we will be taking up the corporate minimum topic on another day, I'm still disappointed that we weren't able to get there today.
Thank you, Representative Rosenbaum. Other comments? Representative Berger.
Well, I guess while we're killing time, I appreciate the remarks of Representative Rosenbaum, but it could be equally said that a lot of people have worked pretty darn hard for estate tax, and it seemed a simple thing last session to me to get it tied up to the federal, and so that too goes. And there's plenty of disappointment here, and it is our, you know, sort of, and Mr. Chair, I'd like you to confirm this, our sort of understanding that these will both be brought back up, that they have not left this session for discussion, for serious discussion, but they have simply left this bill at this time. And I just hope, Mr. Chair, that you would concur that that is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, yes, Representative Butler, that Berger, that is exactly what we're, my understanding is of our plan.
Okay.
We expect to have further and we hopefully fruitful conversation about these issues, all of them.
And if I could continue.
Yes, please.
In the meantime, it is hoped that within some short period of time, we will be going to the floor with a package that has a rainy day fund in it that all Oregonians can say, this will help us, and the rainy day fund itself is something that I think all of us have known, and particularly those of us been in the revenue committee in the past, it's been something we've all known that Oregon, with its unstable tax system, desperately needs. Now, we're not creating one in a day. We're creating a system, hopefully, that will build one over time that will be significant and profound in case of future downturns, which Mr. Warner assures me are coming, because all economists love lines that go like this. And
intersecting
lines. Maslin likes them if they intersect. Paul likes them to go like
question
this.
Points.
I know.
The dismal science.
Thank you. The dismal science. That's why it's called that. Thank you. And, you know, let me just simply add another comment to yours, Representative Berger, and that is this, that today what we're planning to do is to add a very substantial amount of money to the state savings account. We have a small amount now in the Education Stability Fund. We're planning to add another $290 million to the Rainy Day Fund that we're creating in this bill. And to that extent, we hope that this will aid in reducing, in improving our potential for credit rating improvement, which if we get it, will have the effect of reducing our interest costs on future bonds and on other matters of borrowing that we have to do as we build roads and bridges and university buildings and other things, and that all of these improvements will reduce taxpayer costs because they reduce interest rates. In addition to that, the point you made, I think, is absolutely right on. None of us want to go through what we went through in the five special sessions in 2002, where we had to cut programs that we knew were essential for some Oregonians to live well, to live comfortably, or in some cases to live at all. And none of us want to go through that again. And we are moving one step closer to having the kind of reserves that we will need to have in order to prevent that kind of thing from happening in the future. And the other point you made is absolutely also right on. The one thing we know for sure is that the economy fluctuates, and that some years will be good years and other years will be bad years, and that government expenses go on, and that some government expenses actually increase in the years that we have the least income. So being prudent and planning for that is very important, and I hope that part of the message that people take away from us today is that the state is being prudent about putting these funds in the reserve account so that they're there when we need them. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned today and earlier when we discussed roughly the same rainy day fund a week ago, that those of you that were here in 2002 don't want to go through that again. I wasn't here in 2002. I was in local government, and I can tell you that individuals sitting on local government also don't want to go through that again, and more importantly, the citizens of Oregon don't want to go through that again. For the families that watched school days be canceled, who watched their elderly be kicked out of nursing homes, who saw people come out of prisons, and who lost their coverage on the Oregon Health Plan, this will help us not have the resources to cushion that blow. I hope that Oregonians understand this doesn't mean that if we hit a financial downturn, that doesn't mean that we won't have any reductions, but this will shield us from the draconian kinds of band-aids that had to be found by the legislature and quickly implemented by local government and state agencies in ways that were often very painful for Oregonians.
And of course, this is only a beginning.
Correct.
The amount of money we've got, while it's a very substantial amount of money, is only the beginning of the amount we need to save. And it's a good beginning, but it's still only a beginning. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think without a doubt, I can say that the conviction to establish and maintain a rainy day fund is the glue that's held this whole package together to this particular point. That's what we'll be voting on today, is the ability to hold that together with a rainy day fund and to proceed forward with a rainy day fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Brown.
I'd like to make a quick comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Representative Rosenbaum's, frustration that we're not moving quicker. I truly do. We all wish that the legislative process was quicker and that we could get the things we support done quicker. This particular issue, however, I'm very happy in that I think it's a double win for the state of Oregon. It's a win not only for the rainy day fund, which has been well articulated up at this front table here about how the state so desperately needs that sort of assurance, that sort of a safety net, but it's also a win for the element, if you will, that causes us to have a rainy day fund in the first place, which is a very poor tax structure in the state. We were rushing to arguably a precipitous tax reform. It truly was a change in the tax system, but as has been fairly well vetted both publicly and privately, rushing to it as quickly as we did with this particular package left a lot of people unhappy, left a lot of questions unanswered. And so I'm happy. Well, the reason I think it's a double win for Oregon, Oregon's going to get its rainy day fund, but it's also going to put us back at the table with all the variables still on the table for us to address in a non-rushed manner this session, but in a get it done in the next 2 hours sort of manner, the kind of comprehensive tax reform that we need to have so we don't need a rainy day fund as much.
Thank you. That's a useful comment. My proposal is that we stand at ease until we get the amendments. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, it occurs to me that while we're sitting here, we are saving time on the floor because we've all given our floor speech.
Thank you, Representative Berger. With that, the committee will stand at ease. Don't wander off. We're going to vote as soon as these amendments come.
Oh, they're here?
Here we go. The House Committee will come back to order, where, if you'll recall, on work session on House Bill 2031 and House Bill 2707, I want to the committee to note that we've received the A6 amendments. I'd like you to review those. The A6 amendments contain old Section 6 with some minor amendments to deal with the apportioned businesses, that is, businesses that have part of their income, the sales in Oregon, and part of their sales elsewhere. That would be in B and C. Subsection 2 is simply a detail about where we put the matter in the Oregon Revised Statutes. And Section 3 is the normal language that's used for tax measures that requires that it takes goes into effect the 91st day after adjournment. We will get a section or an amendment A7. The reason I want you to go through this now is we'll get in a few moments an amendment A7 to House Bill 2031, which will include the amendment in A4 that will tie it to the passage of House Bill 2707. And that will be the only change in the A7 amendments. So if you're familiar with A6, you'll only have to look to the new piece in A7 when we get there. And the reason why I'm so anxious to have you read that now is that and understand it at this point is that we are running out of time today to get our work done. So.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, you've opened this back under 2707 as well as
yes.
2031,
yes.
This portion of the work session.
Yes.
And I've polled the Republican members of the House on your committee, and there are no votes in the committee on the additions to the B10 amendment, which is the poison pill in 2707, and based upon your explanation of the A6s and the A7s, I note that there are no votes amongst the four Republican members, House members on your committee. I'm anxious that we've got members that need to be able to vote on these matters on the floor today. I appreciate the fact that that we're going to have some heavy lifting. I'm wondering if we could go ahead on the 2707 and begin the work on that, because, as I understand from staff, that B10 amendment is ready to go in. If we are prepared to do that, and as I note, we are all present and accounted for, we are in work session. I am prepared to move the B10 amendments on House Bill 2707.
Paul, does it save us any time to make the amendment to 2707 and get it into the process of getting it ready for the floor?
It could save us a few minutes, Mr. Chair. We can go ahead and start the paperwork right away on that. I think you'll be getting the 2031 shortly.
Okay. All right. Representative Butler, your motion?
My motion is that B10 amendment to Senate Bill, House Bill 2707, dated 3807, be appended to House Bill 2707, that it be printed, see, and drilled. I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the B-10s. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, it is so ordered. Representative Butler.
I move House Bill 2707 with the B-10 amendments be reprinted, see, engrossed, be moved to the House floor with a due pass motion.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2707 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended. Would you call the roll?
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Broome.
Aye.
Vice Chair Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gelser.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Reed.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Chair Barnhart.
Chair votes aye. for the time being, I'm going to assign myself to carry the bill, and having received the required majority, the motion goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Can I make one more comment,
please.
Mr. Chair? Council has asked that you grant them authority to make sure after you pass the bill that they refer to the proper version.
The proper version. Is there any objection to that?
No.
The point simply being that the labels connect. Without objection, that is so ordered. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2707.
Mr. Chair,
that gets you what you need on that piece?
All right. Mr. Chair, just for the record, we've been meeting now for 2 days, and this is the first action we've actually taken. All these works on.
Now,
we're on a roll.
The A7 version of the amendments to House Bill 2031 is being handed out. You'll note the first page is identical to the A6 amendment.
Which is the paragraph,
section
6.
We have a new section 3. And I commend it to you. On the back of the page 2, lines 4 through 7. That's the new piece.
And, Mr. Chair, that does refer to the C engrossed.
Right. And, of course, I think our motion earlier will apply to this one as well. Is that your understanding,
yes.
Committee? Representative,
yes.
Representative Gelser?
Yes, I would move the A7 amendments to House Bill 2031.
Representative Gelser moves the A7 amendments to House Bill 2031. Are there any objections?
Half a second.
Mr. Chair,
yes. Discussion. Discussion first. Yes, thank you, Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I just want to note for the record that at the end of page 1, lines 21, 22, and at the top of page 2, line 1, defines just a little bit extra item there that probably needs to be noted for the record, that where taxpayers apportion business income using a method different than those prescribed presently within the statutes, but which are presently defined for organ sales by the Department of Revenue's authority by rule, is noted for the A7 engrossment.
Thank you. And that, and Representative Butler, and that, of course, deals with one of the issues that we were concerned about in the language of the original bill.
Yes, sir.
Any further discussion?
No.
If not, is there any objection to the A7s? Seeing none, it is ordered that the A7s are included in the bill. Representative Gelser?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2031 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2031 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Paul? We already removed it last time. Yeah.
Stop our hearts.
We've been through this before. There are no referrals. Is there further discussion of the motion? If not, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2031, and there's no further business to come.
I need a carrier.
I'll carry that bill as well, unless we determine at the last moment that someone else is going to do it. We will adjourn this session of our meeting today. Recognize that we are posted for 1 o'clock. All right? We are adjourned.